Do you have a dark curiosity? Follow and listen to Heart Starts Pounding on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Butler wielded outside. Butler, he terminates, gets it to Payton. Payton, hand off to Curry at midcourt. Shot clock at 10. Curry draws two. Feeds Payton above the break, left side, and it's good! GP2 has given the Warriors the lead! 101-100. How is this possible?
Now back to Warriors This Week on 95.7 The Game.
See, that's the little stuff that Tim Roy does, because since he's had... since he's been on the call for the Warriors the entirety of Curry's career, he's seen so many things that you would label as unbelievable or ridiculous. And yet, he still has different stuff in his bag to describe something that you, like the average eye, would see and feel stunned by. You know, a lot of times, like actually Harlan got caught up in this last night. It's the first time I've ever heard him, and he was calling the game on Prime, the first time I've ever heard him at a loss for words. And I think it was when Curry was one of, I think it might have been a part of the 10-point run where he stepped back and like it was the 30-foot shot and he just drills it, net doesn't move. And Harlan like didn't have a call. You know, he's usually got, it's a Curry flurry or, unbelievable or this guy's out of this world or something, I don't know, something. And he like didn't have a call. And that's how you know that the player is doing something utterly ridiculous.
Well, I like that call by Tim Roy because that's exactly how I felt. How is this possible? What's going on here?
I lost you.
Like they're actually going to have a chance of winning this thing, and it's thanks in large part to GP3, the forgotten man.
GP2. Gary Payton II. Gary Payton Jr., that's his brother. But
GP3. You know what I was thinking of? This is the other guy who's on the CP3, who's also on the end of the bench.
The equalizer?
You know, he's DMP now. He's going at he and Brooke Lopez. This is their swan song.
Dude, they're so old. By the way, you know the moment that Chris Paul hung him up officially? When Pods caught him in transition. You cannot get blocked by Brandon Pajemski. You can't get bashed up against the backboard by Brandon Pajemski. I got thoughts on him in a minute. But Scott's been hanging on patiently in Berkeley. Scotty, welcome to Warriors This Week. What's up, man? How are you?
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
How's the dog?
Oh, I don't have a dog, thank goodness.
Sorry.
It was
a different guy. My bad.
You know, after the last two nights, first of all, let's discuss, the Oklahoma City game. You know, with OKC, does it really matter? Because two nights later, they did the same. They did worse to the Lakers. So, you kind of have to take that game out of the conversation. But the last two games have reminded me, because as old as I am, I've seen in this area the greatest baseball player who ever lived, the all-time leader in home runs, the greatest leadoff man in history, the guy who, with 1,400 steals, nobody's ever getting close to that. We've seen the wide receiver with 200 touchdowns. Nobody's ever getting close to that. And now we have a guy who I just looked at his number. I just looked at it. It's what, 4,108 threes? He's probably going to get to 5,000 threes before somebody else gets to 4,000. I can't tell you how many times I've been watching a game and it's like I'm going, that's a bad shot. And then my mind goes, oh, it's Steph. Never mind. So it, you just have to kind of appreciate the moment. Now, insofar as business, the trade window opens up the second week in December. The name that I guess I'm kind of fixed on right now would be Trey Murphy III, since New Orleans fired Willie Green last night.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if Dumars has a plan, to keep that works around him and somehow keeps Zion. But Murphy would fit because of the shooting. Last thought about Under Armour. I give that company, and I have to kind of qualify this because I'm a Maryland graduate, so I'm not necessarily a turtle. I'm a terrapin.
That's a turtle.
Okay, call it that. But I've denied it over the years as well. But, I give Kevin Plank credit for, especially the first Curry, because remember that was a stovetop high top that Steph wore, and I thought it was admirable because that shoe really protected his ankles.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, the marketing with them has just been abysmal. So, and there is another issue. I mean, Plank has some very kind of strange political affiliations back east, so that's kind of, that may have contributed to this as well. But, I kind of look at it and wonder, I could almost see Steph bouncing back to the swoosh. Because, again, if you want to talk marketing and if you wanted to talk technology, Nike's still going to have it over everybody else.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I'm thinking about with this whole thing. But right now, I mean, if we're going to start talking trades, I just keep thinking New Orleans. I'm not going near the Dallas situation under any circumstance.
I got you, Scott. No, appreciate the call, man. Go Terps. I'd love Trey Murphy. I would love Trey Murphy. In fact, they could have got Trey Murphy.
I would do that.
They drafted Moses Moody ahead of Trey Murphy. The one thing he said, though, about Steph has actually got me thinking. Because he mentioned rookie, he mentioned Bonds.
Who's a leadoff hitter he's talking about? Jung-Hoo Lee?
No. He's...
No?
He's talking about Yaz. Steph Curry, like what he's doing with the three-point shot, I don't know, what do you give me for this? What Steph Curry is doing with the three-point shot is like what Ricky Henderson did with steals. Only if the steal was the most valuable part of baseball. Like, there's nothing more valuable than a three-point shot. It is the weapon that every team needs, uses, and largely determines the outcome of games. Steph's the greatest at that one thing. But he's blown everybody out of the water. Like, Ricky Henderson was the stolen base king, and then he played 12 more years. But the steal has become devalued over time, which is the reason why I don't think people really think about Ricky Henderson in the same light as, you know, maybe the Bonzes or the Mazes, the Aarons. Because the home run is the most valuable thing in baseball for a position player. It's like if the steal was the most valuable thing, because he's blown everybody out of the water. When Curry's all said and done, he's right, Scott is. There will not be anybody in his atmosphere as far as three-point makes. But the three-point shot is the most valuable shot in basketball.
I guess the only issue I'd have with the analogy is that hitting a three is much more difficult than stealing a base. Stealing a base is, if you're fast, you can steal bases. What it is that Steph is doing requires a lot more athleticism.
Well, they're completely different sports. I mean, playing basketball.
No, I know, but if you're going to equate the two, the stolen base and the three-point shot, I think the skill set is so different in terms of what it is that you need to do.
No, 100%, but I'm just saying the gap between the two players and then the second-best guy. Like, if you look at Ricky's stolen base records, they're by far and away. I don't think anybody else has 1,000. He's got, like, 1,200 or something.
Who's number two?
I think it's Lou Brock.
Lou Brock, right.
Yeah. But the stolen base has been phased out of baseball because it's not as valuable. The three-point shot is the most valuable shot, and in large in part because of Steph Curry. Like, that's the other part about it, too, which makes it difficult to sort of dig into, is he's the reason why the three is as valuable as it is. He's made it mainstream. You know, before he started taking the amount of threes and from degree of difficulty and distance, there were teams that took threes, but they didn't... I don't think that they were... I don't know if respect is the right word, but it wasn't seen as a viable path to contention. And now it's like, you got to shoot three.
Which is why I think somebody will catch and pass him.
Wemby?
No.
Oh.
Somebody that's probably in AAU right now. And it's because of what it is that you just said, because it's so prevalent.
Damn, Ricky's got 1,400. That's ridiculous. You know what I was thinking? When I'm 70 years old, and you're 120 because...
Still swimming.
Because you don't age. And you're in your cryo chamber, and you got your Ted Williams situation going on. We're going to be watching 10 Wembys on the floor. Like, the way the... Every single sport evolves in different ways.
That's not going to happen.
There's going to be five players on a team, and all of them are going to be 7 feet tall. And all of them are going to be able to dribble and going to be able to shoot. Once one person breaks a barrier, the next ones are all coming. You don't think there's a bunch of 7 foot kids that are seeing Wemby do what he does?
Who's breeding 7'6" people?
Wemby.
Oh, so it's going to be a league full of his offspring?
VW2.
No, but people are going to start recruiting just 7-footers and teaching them and doing this and doing that. I'm telling you, dude, in, 40 years, there's just going to be a bunch of Wembys.
I think it's more practical to see what it is that we've witnessed, where there is now everybody's a Steph Curry, because it's easier to be 6 feet or 6'2". And shoot a three, as opposed to being 7'6" and doing what it is. Wemby's one of one. He's one of one. Like, there's only been one Shaq. It's not as though you looked at Shaq and said, oh, okay, well, let's just...
So earlier this week, Steiny brought up a name, Ralph Sampson.
Yeah.
He's 7'4". I don't know. Do you think he's similar to... I never saw him play. I know he lost to Chaminade, though.
That's right.
When he was at Virginia.
Good call. Chaminade with the... greatest upset in the history of professional
yes,
sports.
Yes, sir.
I called Chaminade games.
Really?
Yeah. The Silver Swords.
You're full of surprises.
Yeah. Play-by-play basketball. Welcome to Chaminade basketball here on KHVH.
The Maui Classic. They also beat Cal a couple years ago. That was a new low.
You know, the shout-out to Willie Green. You know the writing's on the wall? Willie Green, who, by the way, got canned by the New Orleans Pelicans. Poor Willie Green. What the hell is he going to do over there?
I mean, he was there for 5 years.
I know.
I think he actually got a pretty long run.
But you know that something like this is inevitable in terms of you getting canned, is they stopped introducing him at home games.
No way. They stopped doing that?
Yes.
Oh, boy.
Because that's the power of the people. For those of you that
you'd get booed every time they...
Those of you that are listening... And you go to baseball, basketball, football games, and you think you're a fan and you can't move the needle. Look what it is that took place this past week. I do think that the Fire Nico at Dallas, Fire Nico Harrison, was so loud and was so abundantly clear to management, anybody who is sitting in, you know, those executive suites, anybody that was at a Dallas game, that it was like, oh, we got to do something about this, man. Because you can't hide from this. The entire arena was Fire Nico in Dallas. And, of course, Nico Harrison gets his walking papers. And then they stopped introducing Willie Green, the head coach of the New Orleans Pelicans, because the boos, the cascade of boos that would just drown out the entire arena got to a point of embarrassment. Where New Orleans is like, well, it might have been an inevitability regardless, but they're like, well, let's do this sooner rather than later. We can't even introduce the guy at home games. Power of the people. Power of the people.
People shouldn't have all the power, is all I'm saying. But I understand that if your team is that despondent...
Like, listen, if baseball goes on a strike...
Which it will.
You will eat those words, because they need a say in all of this.
Who? The people? People don't... No one cares about work stoppages.
Who loses at the end of the day?
If the players.
All I want to do is watch baseball games.
Yeah.
And you're denying me that fact because the millionaires and the billionaires aren't in an argument. The people need a seat at that table, Evan Giddings.
Oh, my God.
The people have the say, right, Pasta?
If baseball's canceled, you'll see me and Sam Lubman with pitchforks. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's going to go over real well.
the hell's Sam going to do for 7 months out of the year?
He's going to parade down Market Street. But how's the sausage guys doing? Pasta.
Garlic fries and baseball guys?
Yeah,
we
yeah.
just recorded. We just released one yesterday.
Oh, right on. What the hell are you guys talking about during the Anthony Vitello?
You know, Anthony's the full gov name is
Andy?
Crazy. We did talk about Tony Vitello, and that was pretty much it for an hour.
He's in trouble. He just doesn't know.
It's like when our friend from Locked On Warriors, Chuck gives me a call in the middle of the summer going, hey, you want to jump on? What the hell are we going to talk about?
We're going to talk about what we're talking about right now, which is a little bit of everything. This is from the 415 on the Boxer and Gerson Work Injury Attorneys text line. My point exactly. More likely for Chet Holmgren starting for one team. Chet Holmgren is 7'1".
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events. Major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories. The unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
He can dribble. He can shoot. He can defend. The game is going to be played. They're going to have to raise the rims. How about that? I'll go out on a limb. They're going to have to raise the rims to 11 feet. That's where the game of basketball is going.
I'm telling you, if I was the head coach, Mitch Johnson, who proverbial always looks like he just woke up, it's 3 in the morning.
Okay, well, there is something we got to talk about with Mitch Johnson.
What's up? He looks like he bakes more than you.
Can we send a double team? This guy has been killing you for 2 nights. Curry.
Right.
Like, if we're going to be honest about this, I know it's really hard to stop a guy when he's as great as Curry is and when he's got it going. But you think at some point amidst his second near 20-point third quarter, we're just going to trap him at the midline.
They were sending doubles.
Not at half court. Like, get the ball out of his hand.
Oh, okay.
Like, I don't want him with the ball anywhere near the three-point line. The moment he walks down, there was during the 10-point spurt, when you're up 10 points, Jeremy Sochan is backpedaling in transition. Curry takes a 29-foot pull-up. I hate to break it to you, buddy. That's a layup for him. Like, Mitch, can you get a phone call from Greg Popovich at halftime and send a freaking double team at this dude? I know he's not a big man, and it's more difficult to do, but yes, Gary Payton II is going to have to beat us tonight. Draymond Green's going to have to beat us tonight. God love Mitch Johnson, and I think he's a good coach. But back-to-back 45 burgers? Can we make an adjustment?
Did you see the end of the first win against San Antonio? The last, in the closing seconds, when things were pretty much decided. But San Antonio is trying to mount this frantic comeback. They're down like 5, or down like, I don't know, 8 maybe, with just seconds to go. And the Warriors call an inbounds play. And so, I don't know, is Steve Kerr, I don't know if he's the greatest coach currently in the NBA. He's probably in that conversation. But in terms of inbounds plays, I'll put him right at the very top. You give him a timeout and have him craft up an inbounds play, more often than not, he's getting somebody open. May not go in.
Well, that is where you use the gravity of Steph, right?
That's exactly what I'm talking about. So he has everybody lined up. I'd never seen this before. It looked like Hoosiers. They're all in a line. He has Steph race towards San Antonio's basket, like at a full-on sprint going the other way. Like the ball is being inbounded and the Warriors on their side of the basket. He just tells Steph, run as fast as you can towards San Antonio. Look at it. I invite everybody to look at it. Three San Antonio Spurs go running after him. And then they set this perfect screen for Buddy Hield. All Buddy Hield has to do is like literally walk to the basket. There is nobody within dialing distance. And he runs around. It is so Buddy Hield-esque. Thankfully, that game wasn't close. He runs around like, I don't know what to do. Where do I go? And Jimmy Butler is one of the first guys that says, bro, go to the rim. I invite anybody who knows what it is that I'm talking about in the closing seconds of that first one against San Antonio, an inbounds play where Steph Curry drew three defenders and it left things wide open for Buddy Hield. But instead, Buddy Hield set some silly pick instead of going to the rim. And everybody, thankfully, things were decided, because when he went to the bench, everybody was laughing. Like, are you out of your mind? Even Buddy was just like, yeah, just chalk that up to another, you know, Buddy Hield moment.
Well, there was also, yeah, there's been a few Chivano moments this year. There was also the play, I think it was on Wednesday, where they basically ran the same inbounds play, the one that Draymond got the easy layup on last night, and Draymond just blew it. He just smoked the layup.
He does that so frequently. What is up with that?
Dude, there was, I think it
Did
was...
Did you see him in the All-Star competition?
Which one?
The All-Star competition where he was teamed.
The Skills Challenge?
Skills Challenge.
Yeah, I felt bad for Moses. He was his teammate.
He couldn't hit, you know.
Okay.
Layups.
Draymond Green is a future Hall of Famer. He's a four-time champion. He lost a three-point contest to Kevin Hart.
Yeah, that's bad.
Kevin Hart's a comedian.
And he's 5 foot even.
Doesn't matter. You're in the NBA. You cannot lose a three-point contest if you shoot the... Draymond Green, again, the last two games went 4 for 23 from the floor. And I know Wemby was there, but I actually kind of respect how it didn't seem to faze him. Sports, he kept shooting shots.
He was good.
Oh, you know what?
Wemby's dunk?
Which one?
Well, the one off the
backboard?
No, that was nice, but the one on Draymond, which they disallowed because there was a foul before the...
Yeah, I thought that should have counted.
So did I.
To be honest, I thought you were talking about the T-Mac where he threw it off the backboard to himself. That was pretty crazy. That's the thing, too. So Curry was the best player in the game, obviously. But Wemby still had some unbelievable plays. And then he was looking down at Draymond because, of course, Draymond's looking up at him like I'm looking up at every one of these NBA players.
Yeah, I think that I think the misperception on him is that we think that he's just this nice guy from France. He's got some dog, man. He gets in people's faces. And I like when he huddles the team. He's a leader, man. He's something else. He can't get rooted out that easily. He can't have Draymond Green extend him 30 feet from the hoop.
Well, Draymond does that to a lot of guys.
But he's just got to play so much closer to the rim.
But if you're not tough, like if you're not physically tough, Draymond Green is going to expose you. And even if you are a physical player, I mean, remember last year what he did to Giannis. Like, if you have a part of your game that he can exploit, Giannis can't shoot, so Draymond's going to try and force him into jump shots, and he wasn't making them that night. Wemby doesn't have yet, I think, I don't know if it's the mentality or the body, you know, the strength to play inside the paint. And so Draymond's going to allow him to hurt him from the perimeter.
I would say this if I was Mitch Johnson. Even if you're not on the post, and even if you don't have a touch on a possession, and let's just say the ball gets reversed and it's on the other side of the floor, opposite of you, if there's a shot that goes up, I want you in the paint for that. Now, maybe Draymond's going to put a body on you, but you're just too long and you're too big and you're too disruptive not to get in the paint more often than you do. And I'm not just talking about exclusively touches, where he's at the post or wherever. I'm just talking about I need to see you physically in the paint, because you could keep so many balls alive, as he did in the fourth quarter. He had a left-handed tip. It's just he could be so much more effective. I mean, there shouldn't be possessions where I don't see him, and I see a lot of those when I watch San Antonio games. Somebody will come down. Somebody will shoot a wing three. And the other team will get a rebound, they'll go the other way, and I don't even see Wembanyama, even though he's out on the floor.
You mean like the last two possessions when De'Aaron Fox missed the go-ahead game winner? All right, on the other side, I want to dig into something Steve Kerr said from earlier this week, and...
More sound.
You hate sound.
Wake me up, Boston. We're done hearing from Steve Kerr for the 35th time this week.
Well, we're halfway through the show. What do you mean 35th time this week? You haven't listened to him once.
That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate it. All right, Evan Giddings, Dan Devone, Warriors this week. Back after this.
What a game. Curry, second free throw, and the Warriors take the lead, albeit with 6.4 to go. It's 109-108.
theater is not dead in America. It's alive and well in San Antonio, Texas.
Now back to Warriors This Week on 95.7 The Game.
I can listen to that sound.
That was pretty good. You think he's been cooking that up for a minute? I don't think I've ever heard Tim Roy break that one out.
No.
Have you heard real quick, I have another one too, because you guys were talking about Buddy Hield's miscues. Listen to this.
Oh, no.
Warriors facing full court pressure. Al Horford will come back, and they throw it away. Fox the steal. Buddy Hield threw it right to him. Keldon Johnson over to Champagne. Same spot, same shot, same result. That is an inexcusable play.
What's up with our boy this year?
Givano?
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you, man.
You know, Oklahoma's retiring his number.
I'd believe that.
I saved the day.
That dude was a baller.
Yeah, he was.
He had that one, I think it was the NCAA tournament. Was it the Sweet 16 where he dropped 45 on Oregon?
Like, oh, remember that?
Buddy Buckets. Yeah. That dude was something else. I mean, he was, I know once Curry got into the league, everybody was trying to find the next one. And like Trae Young is the guy that usually gets, I think, put into that category because he's a point guard and shot from really deep. But like Buddy Hield was, that dude was a bad man in college.
Something's up with him now. But this is just sort of who he is. I do not have a, I don't push the panic button with this guy because I do think that at some point he'll have a couple of Buddy games. And well, then it'll get weird again, and then it'll be Buddy.
Yeah, I think like Buddy's important. Well, they also could use him as a trade chip at the deadline just to kind of match salaries. But I think Buddy, like, what was it? There was 2 months last year where he shot 30%. It was basically phased out. It was December and January.
Yeah, when everybody was terrible. Him and Pajemski, remember that?
Well, that, yeah, and Pods had like the face mask. It's just, it was gross. But Buddy's a guy I think you're eventually going to, like, it's funny, you brought up the Laker game earlier in the show and how, you know, everything looked a bit more even. Kuminga was playing well. Jimmy Butler was doing stuff. Curry didn't play well and they still won. Yeah, Buddy Hield had 20 points off the bench. You know, I think when Hield starts to find his stroke again, the Warriors become a little more dangerous because one of the reasons why, I don't know if we talked about it, but one of the reasons why, like, after game four, I kind of looked at the team and said, Kuminga might need to come off the bench. It wasn't as much about starting this kind of lineup as it was the second unit just doesn't have anybody who can score. Buddy Hield is a streaky shooter. Pajemski's not a scorer. Moody, who was coming off the bench, is a pretty streaky shooter. Will Richard is a capable shooter, but not going to score a ton of points unless apparently he's playing the Sacramento Kings. And Jimmy Butler is the only dude who basically Kerr throws him out there when they sort of stagger him in Steph's minutes. He's the only guy that can do anything offensively. So I think, like, Kuminga, I think, to me, coming into this year, fit is like the off-the-bench, you know, sort of gunner point scorer. But, you know, if Buddy Hield comes around, maybe he can help be that guy. I don't know.
Kuminga has just regressed. I don't think a lot of us foresaw this. I think we thought that he had turned the corner.
Oh.
Oh, you thought he was going to be this guy at the end of the day?
No, not this guy, but I think he'll eventually bounce back and get better, but
really?
He's kind of always been this guy. Like,
well, no,
he's been good, and then he's been bad, and then he's been good, and then he's been bad.
But at the beginning of this year, and taking into account everything, all the drama that we dealt with over the offseason and his contract, that everybody felt as though he got paid, and now he understands. He finally got it. He recognizes after Steve Kerr has been pounding his head, it finally got in. Oh, you want me to rebound? Oh, okay. I understand what I'm supposed to do offensively, and I can still be me. This is what it's like to be a grown-up. But we're right back to Jonathan Kuminga, you know, circa 2023, 2024, 2025. I mean, it's the same old guy.
Well, I think his role changed a little bit, right? So for the first, what was it, five games, he had to be kind of more of a role guy. And you notice, I think the games where he struggled were the games where he had to kind of play up a notch. Like Curry went out. All right, JK, we need you to score more.
I have to make an excuses.
No, but I'm just being honest. Like that's when it shifted for me, at least watching him play. And against Sacramento, like he had a good half and then he just fell apart in that second half. And then the knees started barking, It's just like, I just don't think he really fits, because what they need is spacing, and they need guys who take care of the basketball. And he doesn't do either of those things. He doesn't shoot it well enough.
He fits when he's confident and he knows what it is that he's decisive.
Okay,
he
well,
fits.
I'm sorry. Like, if you can't be confident, and this is it too. If you can't be confident, number one, in year five, well, then I can't help you. And if you can't be confident, you spent all summer trying to get a contract and or get traded. The latter didn't happen, but the first one did. You're making $23 million this year. So it's not like you're sitting there adjusting to a role and going being bounced back and forth, and you're making $7 million and worrying about your future. You got what you wanted. You got paid. You got to live with this. Like, if you can't be confident and be paid, he's one of the highest paid players on the team.
Well, that's why it's time to go.
Well, I'll give it a couple months. 888-957-9570 is the number. Dan's favorite segment, sound, coming up next in just a moment. But before that, we're going to talk to Austin, one of our favorites. Austin in San Jose. Welcome to Warriors This Week, Austin. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. Great conversation. And yeah, 30, man. It's all about 30. And I'm going to change my tune a little bit. I was saying, and I get on Google all the time about there's no way they would have beaten OKC last year. But now I'm starting to backtrack a little bit. 30 had one of those nights like, I mean, you can't do it every night, but man, if he put together one of those things he's been doing the last 2 days, I think anybody's beatable. And it's also, obviously, as we all know, being Warriors, that's the impact he has on the game, and you can kind of see what he does to the other team, man. It's just, the other thing was struck me last night, I think it was really kind of poetic, guys, that he did it against Wemby and Sandler. I think, you know, we give our props to Wemby as being the next. Mm-hmm. But Steph was saying, sent a message last night saying, not so fast. You know what I mean? I'm still here, young man. And
welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're going to get yours, but for now, I'm still the king. So I think Steph sent a real strong message. Very, very impactful. Really good theater last night. And the one thing I wanted to say, you guys were talking about earlier about the record. You remember when Steph was breaking the three-point record? You know what was more important, especially the young generation? They cared more about the record than they did about the game. And by that, I mean, and Ricky Henderson was kind of the same way. If you remember, when he was doing the steal thing, people didn't really care about the game. They just wanted to see him steal. And it was Steph, they just wanted to see him make threes. Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of weird in this day and age we live in where the Steph brand and who he is can become bigger than the actual outcome of the game and the score, if that makes sense, guys. And then the last thing I wanted to say was that where do we go from here? Well, we're 8-6. We could have been 7-7. I don't think it matters anymore what the seed is, as long as we don't get into we avoid the play-in, guys. I think the Warriors will be dangerous, whether they're the fourth seed, the sixth seed, the second seed. I don't think they even care. I think the players, if you put them under, gave them the truth serum, they wouldn't give a damn where they ended up. So, and then one last thing, Kuminga. You know I'm a Kuminga guy. I've now come to the conclusion, though, Evan, that he's not going to be here. I think it's better for him to move on. I can see a scenario now where he goes somewhere else and probably does better than he does within the Warriors system. I don't think it's going to work. I don't. I think they can be successful without him. But I also think they need to go get another piece. If they can go get a piece to complement what Kerr wants to do, a wing, I think they need to go get a shooting wing. Somebody like Trey Murphy, that kind of an athlete, mm-hmm. Devin Vassell, that kind of stretch guy that's longer on the wing that can shoot. That's what I think they kind of lack. So, yeah, man, I think we got a lot to be look up forward to. And it's really fun to see 30 go off last night, guys. Thanks again.
Thanks, Austin. Good call as always. Yeah, I think to kind of start where he did, I don't know. Did it have you thinking, feeling differently about last year? Because I remember you and I were talking during the playoffs about how last postseason was going to be their shot. And it was as much about the Warriors as it was, well, it's going to be hard to get OKC once they got championship pedigree. And now they do. I wonder how they would have fared against Oklahoma City. I do feel more confident now that they would have beaten Minnesota. Like, I think that is almost a foregone conclusion with the way that Curry remained.
Well, I wouldn't say foregone conclusion because you never know.
Well, someone else could have gotten hurt, but I'm saying if he stayed healthy, I feel pretty good that they would have beaten the Timberwolves. Well,
that's tough to do because he wasn't healthy, and why wasn't he healthy? It's because he expended so much energy in getting to the playoffs. Keep in mind, it wasn't just a play-in game, and it wasn't just going seven games against Houston. It was the last month of the year where they had to go, what was it, 23-4, 23-5, whatever that number, that ridiculous one-loss record was when they got Jimmy Butler. They needed every one of those wins, and guess what? Even finishing with a flurry at 23-4, they were still in the play-in game. And so I don't know how effective he would have been. The one thing we know about Steph up to this point, I think the one thing that I take away from the early part of the season is that when Steph is well-rested, the Golden State Warriors are a good basketball team. If Steph, as well as the rest of those guys, find themselves in a flurry of games or a condensed schedule, they got all these road trips, whether it's at Milwaukee, Indiana, ugliness, Steph and the rest of the guys are not very good. Well rested, you got a chance, and Steph could be as good as anybody. And yes, he could slay the dragon. That includes OKC. But at this age, rest is imperative. It's everything.
Well, that's why, to me, if like when I saw this road trip combined with the amount of, you know, back to backs that they've had to play. So I was looking at this, Dan. By the end of this road trip, when they finish in Miami on Wednesday, they will have played five back to backs in their first 17 games. No other team will have played more than three. They will have played, it's like the amount of days where they've had to travel right before. So they're getting into town and then playing it. They'll have played more than any other team in the league. So I think the schedule has hurt them from that standpoint, combined with them obviously being a lot older. Like they're ill-equipped to handle a schedule of this rigor. But it eventually, at some point, is going to soften. So them stealing two games in San Antonio is big, because if they had come back 8-9, I don't think that would have been the end of the world. And that would have meant they'd gone 2-4 over this road trip. And I guess technically that, you know, they could lose the next three. I don't think it's going to happen, but they could. I still just think they're in survival mode at the beginning of this year because of how rigorous the schedule's been, how old their team is. And so nights like last night are important because you steal a game that you weren't supposed to get. And to your point, I do push back a little bit on Austin from the standpoint of they don't care what seed they are. I think they do. And I think top six is the seed they want because, to your point, last year they learned that there are ramifications for having to play in basketball. And that is you're behind the eight ball. And then maybe you're not ready to close a series as quickly as you want. And there's an effect of playing more and playing deeper into a series against a team that you should have, that you were up 3-1 against, that you could have won game six at home against. But instead you blew that game and you had to go to Houston. And Steph had to play 44 minutes in that game. Like, there are impact, there are consequences for not finishing high in the standings. And I'm hoping that this year is a year where they, I guess, are able to thread that needle.
Yeah, it's really simple. You give these older guys, especially Steph Curry, rest, and you get what it is that you saw in San Antonio. You know, when you don't want it to happen, but you think about Steph, some of his best basketball, and the years they've won titles, their last titles. Steph missed a good chunk of the season, and it inadvertently gives him load management, right? So he's not playing. And
I think he missed the last 15 games of the year they won the championship.
Nobody wants to see him get the flu early on in the season, but a well-rested Steph where he has a couple of days off, you get what it is that you saw in San Antonio. But is that sustainable?
I don't think it is.
Yeah, OKC, really quick. I know they're scared. I told this to you last year, and this is why I like to go out on a limb. You don't give me any credit, but that's fine because I wasn't right.
What?
When I said last year, OKC is not, even though they were the proverbial favorite, they're not going to win the title.
Did you say that?
Yeah, I said because, no. And I was, they were the number one seed, and everybody was like, everybody was OKC, OKC, and I was the one guy in the room saying, nah, they're going to get beat.
Mm-hmm.
And I said that, it's because younger teams don't necessarily fare well in the postseason. That, albeit they were good and dominant in the regular season, the postseason is such a different animal, and younger players get exposed. And usually you have to hit your head up against that wall a couple of times before you break through and become a championship team. That's typically the pedigree when you look at historically NBA champions. And okay, that didn't happen to OKC, but if you think about it, that game seven they got pushed to against Denver, Denver was playing hurt. They didn't have Aaron Gordon available.
Well, he was just playing with a hamstring.
Or he played, yeah. But he was like at 40%.
Yeah.
And then you think about going seven against Indiana. Like, that was the opportunity, I think, to knock them off. The worst thing that happened to the Western Conference and the rest of the NBA is that they won that title and they went to the postseason and they got that experience. That was the one caveat you could say if you're going to clip them, it was going to happen last year.
Well, you can make the case that if Halliburton doesn't tear his Achilles in game seven, they might have lost. You know, to your point, like they were gettable last year. They played 2 7-game series, the last of which obviously in the NBA Finals. Denver was the team that I think a lot of people had pegged, but Gordon is awesome. He might be their second best player right now, but there was something.
Jamal Murray's averaging like over 30. He's crazy this year.
Yeah, they've all been that team looks really good. Although they just lost Christian Brown for 4 to 6 weeks, and Cam Johnson.
Still bad. Oh, yeah, what's going on with it? You know what's funny?
You remember last year when everyone was saying that Cam Johnson was going to be the elixir to solve the Warriors' woes? Like, give up the picks. Give them Kuminga. Give them 2 first-round picks. Give them, it wasn't Kuminga. Maybe it was Kuminga too, but Wiggins. You know, give up everything for Cam Johnson. Go all in for Cam Johnson. What are we talking about? He's a good player.
He's better than this.
Yeah, but he ain't that good. He's like the fourth best player of that team. He's really good as a. By the way, when the Suns went to the NBA Finals, which is what everybody was throwing back at, you know, Cam Johnson's got postseason experience. I'm pretty sure he was the sixth man on that team. Yes, he only started 11 games.
One nugget when we're talking about the Nuggets, just stay on them for a moment.
Yeah.
So the Morris twins. And the Jokic brothers?
I know where you're going.
Like, they're getting after it again, and the Morris twins are...
They're so stupid, the Morris twins.
They are... God, this has to happen. They want to fight him in a ring.
What, like a Jake Paul type of showdown?
I'm just... Again, I told you about Strangio, what's his brother's name? The Joker's brother is the largest human. I told you when I saw this guy going into court... How I've never seen somebody that immense.
Wait. Court?
Yeah, because he punched. Remember, I was telling you this story early on. He got into a fight at a Nugget game. I'm not talking about the joke. I'm talking about his brothers. His brothers are telling the game.
On the basketball court.
No, not on the basketball court. He got into a fight in the stands.
That's a three, pasta.
And so he had to do the perp walk or something. So he's walking through with his attorney in this suit. He has no neck. He's 6'11". And he's pushing 4 bills. He's like 400 pounds. But it's not fat. It's just that crazy girth. Then I was reading this story. You know, they love horses and they race horses. It's just like a mule once. They kicked him in the head.
They are horses.
And he got kicked in the head. And he's like, yeah, I'm okay. I mean, I just, like, these guys, to see the Joker and him against the Morris brothers, I'd watch that.
What? Isn't there another Jokic brother?
There's 3 of them, yeah.
Yeah, so I'll take... Any combination of the two, or any two of the three. You could, Nikola, who's, by the way, the baby. Like, he's the baby of the three. I'll take his two older brothers against the Morris twins.
Well, the Morris twins are saying, yeah, everybody thinks that, but I'm 6'10", and I'm like, you know, I'm a big dude, too. And the thing that they don't have is athleticism. Like, when you come to boxing and fighting, we're athletes. They're not. I mean, they're serious about this.
Oh, I thought it was like a street fight or something. It's not going to go the way they think it's going to go. All right. Your favorite Favorite time of the show, Dan. Let's get into some sound. All right. Well, Dan takes a nap over there. I want you to listen to what Steve Kerr said about Draymond Green's agenda comments. It's very telling.
It's just the way Draymond put it, and I know exactly what he was saying. I just wouldn't put it that way because I don't think there's any individual player who is not committed to winning. I think what happens is we get misguided. We don't realize some of the things we're doing are not conducive to winning. Sometimes guys try too hard. And so trying too hard can be, not committed to winning also. So it's never a conscious decision. It's just, the margin for error and, between winning and losing in the NBA is so small. You lose a couple games and you get slightly out of sync. Ball's not moving quite fast enough, or you turn it over too many times, or you're not rebounding. And all of a sudden, you get blown out. It looks like you have no energy because you're dejected. That's what Draymond was talking about. And it feels like a lack of commitment to winning, I guess, but it's really more just, hey man, this is the greatest league in the world and we're out of sync and we've got to refocus our efforts and what we're trying to accomplish.
Oh, you're looking at me like that. I think that Draymond Green said it the way that Kerr wishes he could say it.
I agree. That's cleaning it up.
Yeah, he's right. He wouldn't say it like that. That's why they're very different. But I also think that they are kindred spirits in the sense they speak the same competitive language. They just talk differently. Like Kerr's more political, has I think a little more emotional awareness, should we say. Draymond Green is very cut and dry, straight to the point. But they're both talking about the same thing. Whether you want to call it agendas or pressing, they both understand that this team was not looking the way that it should. And Kerr's saying, effectively, I thought what Draymond did, which is they're playing as individuals. They're trying too hard, and as a result, they're playing more like five individual guys as opposed to one collective unit.
I can pretty much tell you why they weren't playing well during that stretch. It's because Steph Curry wasn't available. But no, it is fascinating. Before we get to the break, it is such a fine line, isn't it, in the NBA? When you looked at that team, again, that didn't have Steph Curry against Indiana, and then they did have him against Oklahoma, but he was still sick. But when you don't have energy and you don't have that enthusiasm and you're not buying in and there's no confidence, you look like an entirely different team than the one that took the floor against San Antonio. It's just that fine line of a team that is doing the little things to win. And they look like an entirely different squad against Oklahoma. And it's just, and it wasn't about anybody doing, well, Steph, obviously, but everybody else, it's just about ramping up their energy and just, being that team that is engaged. It's all it is.
Well, that's why I think, so on Wednesday was a little bit of a different story because they were down 16 points. Like they didn't look very good in the first half. And actually the starting unit that they changed, which we can talk about more on the other side, didn't play very well. But having Steph out there is so settling that I think Kerr is talking about energy and not getting down on yourself. It's a lot easier to do that when you have Steph Curry in your corner. All right, 1 hour left here on Warriors This Week. Evan Giddings and Dan DeVone taking your calls at 888-957-9570. Also, the Boxer and Gerson Work Injury Attorneys text line. Hit us. One more hour left until noon on a Saturday on 95.7 The Game.
Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey, wherever you get your podcasts.